Now, the people making allegations against certain of these deviant Freemasons, do you have a sense of what positions they held within the Masonic Lodge organization, whether they were lower-ranking or higher-ranking Masons?
I don't know for sure. I know that some of the people against whom allegations had been made, never proven, seem to be fairly high-ranking members. I also know that some ordinary members hear these allegations and they're in disbelief. These Masons, these allegations, have been just part of a long tradition of persecution against Freemasonry because of secrecy and so on. Well, that's certainly not my intent. I have no axe to grind with Freemasonry. It's a peculiar group in the context of issues about women's rights and equality and so on. So there's ways to discuss Freemasonry in the context of male exclusiveness and so on. But you know, I've got no axe to grind with the Freemasons at all. It's just a and once I got challenged on the Masonic issues, I started finding out that there are people right around North America who have also made allegations that they have been richly abused by Freemasons. There are a number of organizations based in the States that specifically insist that deviant Freemasons had abused them. Indeed, in Canada, there's one organization whose leader is absolutely convinced that she's the survivor of deviant Masonic abuse. So when I was able to see that the accounts that I was getting were part of a large context, a large North American context, it became even more intriguing to me about the kind of specific allegations I had been receiving.
Now, as you said, the Masonic Lodge has had a long history of being persecuted. Is there any indication that the allegations made against them may be part of some kind of propaganda campaign against the Masonic Lodge?
I'm very wary of information, so-called information, that comes out of conservative Christian contexts. That is to say, a number of conservative Christians see Freemasonry as being involved in forms of the occult and devil worship. So organizations that are related to these conservative groups and the information they put out are highly suspect. So I do my best to stay away from that kind of information. I don't get the sense, though, from most of my informants that they have these kind of axes to grind about Freemasonry. I mean, they don't seem to be involved in these conservative Christian contexts. Many of them, I think most of them, have no interpretive context to place their own memories about the Freemasons. For them, they feel extremely isolated with these kind of accounts. They have no sense that other people in different parts of North America have made similar kinds of allegations. So I cannot place most of the accounts that I've received in a context of some sort of vengeance against the Masons.
Do you feel that the people you come in contact with making allegations have any kind of knowledge of what Freemasonry is about?
I certainly don't get that sense from people. Again, these are for the most part women, and as you know, women are excluded from Masonic ritual and practice. So it wouldn't be impossible for them to gain internal knowledge about Masonic rituals, but it takes some work. You have to go out and actively seek the information. So I just don't get any sense that these people have a vendetta, or at least most of the people have any kind of vendetta against Freemasonry.
Now, within the accounts coming from the survivors, do you get the sense that what they're telling you is in terms of the ritual, specifically Masonic? Are there specific Masonic elements to the rituals themselves that come forth?
Some of the content of the ritual seems to take place in Masonic lodges. So many people talk about altars. Some people talk about black and white floors. Some people talk about pillars in the ceremonial area, and so on. So, I've had some people who have these memories and try to get a context for them, and because their fathers were Masons, will actually try to get into Masonic lodges so they can look at them and see if the lodges have any semblance, similarity to what they're recalling. Again, ordinary Masons would be appalled at these kinds of things. I have absolutely no indication that any ordinary Masonic rituals involve anything even close to child abuse. It's in the deviance inside Freemasonry, and possibly some of these splinter groups that hold the most concern for me. It's entirely plausible for me to imagine, for example, that deviant Freemasons would pull some material from some of the extremist writings of Aleister Crowley, or take some of Crowley's statements about children and sex literally, or some of Crowley's statements about child sacrifice or human sacrifice, and take them literally and build rituals around them. The Crowleyites insisted Crowley was talking metaphorically, but if it's written down, any tradition is going to have fundamentalists and literalists, people who read it and think it's true and then act upon it.
Are you aware of what the response has been by the Masonic Lodge to the allegations concerning ritual abuse, and has there been any attempt at some kind of internal investigation?
I'm not aware of any kind of internal investigations. I met with some Masons in Thunder Bay, and my impression is that what I was talking about was so far from their experience inside Freemasonry that they couldn't even grasp what I was saying. That is to say, it'd be unfortunate for me to make great judgments just based upon a meeting of a couple of hours, but I had no indications that these particular people were in any way involved in anything like what I was hearing. In fact, during the meeting, they invited me to explore for myself Freemasonry, and I, declined the invitation. So I think most Freemasons say these allegations are nonsense. I've had one practicing Mason contact me just to get more information because he was concerned. I've had another practicing Freemason contact me because he saw me as part of this anti-Masonic movement and thought that what I was saying was dangerous and inaccurate. So I've had some responses from Freemasons, but not a lot. And I have some friends, not close friends, who are Masons, and this stuff just seems to be wholly outside of their experience. But I've got repeated accounts, and there are accounts similar to the ones that I've gotten right across North America.
Well, Dr. Stephen Kent, I'd like to thank you very much. It's been extremely fascinating talking to you, and thanks for joining us in this radio series.
Oh, again, it's my pleasure to speak about a very controversial and contentious issue.
We've been listening to an interview with Dr. Stephen Kent, a sociology professor at University of Alberta. This next segment of this show is part of CBC Thunder Bay coverage of the Making Up for Lost Time workshop series dealing with ritual abuse that took place in 1994-95. We're going to hear a response to the allegations of ritual abuse against Freemasons by Peter Tui, a Mason living in Thunder Bay area. And I'd like to thank CBC Thunder Bay and producer Don Edwards for allowing us to include this coverage in our series. You're listening to CKLN 88.1.
Me now in the studio is Peter Tui. He's an active member of the Masonic Order here in Thunder Bay. Mr. Tui, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to see you back.
Yeah, thank you very much. You've just heard the interview we ran. I'm sure you've heard about the conference on in Thunder Bay. How much credence do you give these allegations of ritual abuse by Masons?
None whatsoever. The If I can explain, Gerald, the funds that were put forward by the Ministry of the NDP government was for a workshop on ritual and sexual abuse. There's been a lady within the organization locally that's sponsoring this so-called function. And all the more luck to him. I have no objections to that. In fact, if we can have any input into it, we'd be more than happy to. But the fact that she has now mentioned an organization, namely the Masons, and accused them of a horrendous crime, I think is totally irresponsible. And I think there is an onus on the Stone Angels now to have this person come forward and either substantiate that claim, okay? Failing to do that, it's a total irresponsible, spontaneous utterance by this lady. And I'm talking about Lynn Moss Sharman.
What are you going to do about it?
I'm trying to counter it by talking to people such as yourself. We're not backing off in any way. If someone wants to know about the Masonic Order, I'm here to discuss that.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Masonic Order. Listening to Dr. Kent a minute ago, he said it was possible that individual Masons might, he said might, because of the cases he's investigated over the years, might be involved with this without any support from the Masonic Order itself. Do you see that even as a possibility?
No, I can take you to an article in the Toronto Star on January the 9th, if I can. And this is an article by Donna Laffram Boyce. She's a freelance reporter with that organization. And her bottom line says that a study released last fall by the National Center on Child Abuse and Neglect in the United States had examined nearly 12,000 allegations of satanic and ritual abuse and found not one could be substantiated. This was funded by government money just 2 weeks prior to this thing. Now, the government, which is the NDP government, has turned around and given another $15,000 to fund another organization. And this same lady's bottom line is saying, so tell me, how do I get $15,000 of government money to hold a conference about something that doesn't exist?
Well, Mr. Tuohy, what's the bottom line here? Why are so many people accusing the Masons of this? I mean, where is this coming from? Out of the thin air? Or what? I mean, there's a lot of accusations here. Not only in this province, as we've just heard from Alberta as well. What's happening?
What you've heard from Dr. Stephen Kent is that he's received reports. None of them have been substantiated. And he's the first to indicate this. It was indicated by him in his news release to the Chronicle Journal.
But why do you think you're the target? I mean, there's the Lions Club, the Rotary Club, the Elks Club. Why the Masons?
There is, and always has been, an anti-Masonic movement. In fact, one time in the United States, there was an anti-Masonic party. This has gone by the board. I don't know. I can't speak for those people. I can speak for myself as a Mason, and by no means am I giving the official word of the Grand Lodge of Canada and the Province of Ontario or of the 8 lodges in the city. I can tell you what Masonry is about. I can tell you that they and their organizations that are involved with them donate over $545 million a year to charitable organizations. That comes out to about $1.4 million a day. And they fund things such as research into schizophrenia, to autistic children, to the Shrine Hospitals, to the Sick Children's Hospital, the Help Fund, Hearing for Every Living Person. They give upwards of, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars for bursaries to university students, for Masons and non-Masons.
Mr. Tuohy, do you think it would be useful for the Masons themselves to look into this at all, or to simply just to dismiss it?
The Masons are totally aware of this. It's been discussed at the Grand Lodge hearings. I'll say one thing. Masonry is a private organization, such as the Elks, such as any fraternity within the city. It's not a religious order. Its main principles are to make good people better, okay? It doesn't profess to be a religion, although they have ministers, they have people from every walk of life that belong in. Throughout the world, there's 6 million Masons, which, if you take the world population, is a very minority.
I guess for a lot of people, there is a sense of secrecy about this group. that that perhaps they're not as well known as the Lions Club. They're not as open, perhaps, as the, again, just to use an example, the Lions or the Legion, for example. How would you react to that?
I don't know why you would say that. The Masonic buildings in Thunder Bay, as in any other city, that are recognized by the Grand Lodge of Canada in the province of Ontario, are well marked. You mentioned the Legion. There's the Ortona Legion on D Street, which I'm a member of. There's also the Masonic Lodge or Temple on D Street.
Well, can anybody join the Masons then? Let's put it that way.
If you have strong moral beliefs, if you believe in a supreme being, you could apply to join the Masons. It's one of the requisites that you must be 21 years of age, have good moral character. The only person I would say that perhaps can't join the Masons is an atheist, because he doesn't believe in the supreme being or God. It does not restrict membership on any basis of race, color, or creed, or religion. It's open to any religion, any race, any color.
What sort of screening process are people put through when they do join?
Masonry, in the first place, does not pursue members. The person who joined the Masonic Order must ask for an application. They must volunteer to join. When they file their application, it's put before the lodge, and it's got to be sponsored by two members. They have a character committee that not only interviews the Mason, but interviews the Mason's family, because it's not in our realm to take food off a table or to cause dissension within the family. So what we want to know, not only from the Mason, is he able to join it? Can he afford it? Is his family behind him on this? And if his spouse or members of the family are a little upset, we try and urge the person to reconsider. And down the road, if things change, then we'd be glad to see him come in. Mm-hmm. But it's not up. It's not within our realm to cause dissension within that family union.
Mr. Tui, do you feel personally attacked in any way about what's happened? How do you respond personally to this?
Firstly, when I read the article, I was appalled, personally. And I'm speaking not only as a Mason, but as a citizen of Thunder Bay. And I base this on a few principles. Namely, if a person, or if a parent hears a complaint from their child, they're bound to listen to that child and believe them, because that's within a family unit. If a person goes to a therapist and lays a complaint, the therapist has an obligation to believe that person. That's the only way they can get to the bottom of it. I have no objections with these things at all. And this is what this conference should have been all about. But when a person in a responsible position comes out and makes a public statement accusing an organization of this alleged abuse that she suffered, then I think it's irresponsible on her part if she does not come forward and substantiate that. And failing to do it, I think, should result in one of two things. She should either be asked to retract it, or she should be asked to step down, particularly when the funding for this conference comes with public money.
Mr. Tui, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Creating a controversy in Thunder Bay. A professor at the University of Alberta is to lead a discussion on ritual torture by Masons. Survivors of abuse can attend, so can social workers. But one Mason who wanted to attend has been told the meeting is closed to him and other Masons. Shane Judge reports.
The four-day-long workshop starts Wednesday. It's put on by a group calling itself the Stone Angels. Lynn Moss-Sharman speaks for the group. She says there are 60 people in Thunder Bay who say as children they were victims of organized, repeated sexual and physical abuse by adults. They say this abuse took place within the context of a ceremony that had a religious, magical, or supernatural connotation. Peter Tui doesn't have a problem with a government grant going to the Stone Angels to study ritual abuse. But the retired police officer, an active Mason, says he is upset he can't hear what will be said about Masonic ritual torture, especially after Moss Sharman has said publicly there are victims in Thunder Bay.
But I am upset that an organization, namely the Masonic organization, has been smeared by this lady, and as a result, I feel that we should have recourse to addressing people at that meeting and to see if this unsubstantiated complaint, if there's anything to it.
Ma Sharman says there's nothing wrong with taxpayers' money being used to hold a closed meeting. She says it's done to protect the safety and confidentiality of the survivors.
I find it really ironic, and I guess in some ways amusing, that a white male secret society would kick up such a media fuss about not being allowed into a meeting or a gathering, because no one is allowed to go to their meetings or their rituals.
Ma Sharman says Tui can find out all he wants from the professor on his own, before or after the workshop. He'll be speaking Friday night. Shane Judge, CBC News, Thunder Bay.
No, you are not listening to the CBC. This is CKLN 88.1, but we just did hear an interview done by the CBC in Thunder Bay with Peter Tui, a Mason in the Thunder Bay area, speaking to the allegations of ritual abuse against Freemasons. In this final segment this morning is an interview with Judy Steed, again as part of CBC's coverage for the Making Up for Lost Time conference, a ritual abuse survivor workshop series put on by the Stone Angels in Thunder Bay. Judy Steed is a reporter for the Toronto Star and has covered issues of child sexual abuse and ritual abuse.
Joined by Judy Steed. Judy's a journalist with the Toronto Star, and she's first on the podium at the conference. Judy, thanks for joining me on Northwest Noon.
Thanks, Don.
How do you know ritual abuse exists?
Well, I encountered it very unsuspectingly when I was assigned to cover a trial in 1991 of a man named Billy Elliott, who's from Prescott, Ontario. And I didn't know that I was going to encounter my first ritual abuse trial, but lo and behold, the police had evidence that Billy Elliott had been in the habit of digging up bodies in the graveyard, pulling the heads off skeletons, and engaging in these kind of makeshift basement rites where a bunch of adults would dress up in costumes, disguising their faces, and they would sexually abuse children. This has all been documented. The adults all corroborated each other's stories, and they were convicted. And so that was my first glimpse into this whole concept of kind of group sexual abuse of children or ritual abuse.
Have you had your eyes open since that first glimpse?
Yeah, and I have to say I can understand why people don't want to believe that this stuff happens, because it's really frightening and horrific. But I think that if we even think about what we've seen on these airborne regiment tapes about the ways that these men behaved in groups, that this is a type of group behavior. These initiation rites are on a spectrum that relates to this ritual abuse conference and the type of activities we're talking about.
Is it with a certain group of people? Is there a certain profile on these individuals, Judy?
Well, from what I've seen so far, you're looking all across the so-called socioeconomic spectrum. In Prescott, the people were quote-unquote white trash. They were people who'd been on welfare for generations and basically seemed to have nothing to do but sit around all day and abuse children. But since I wrote a piece in the Star last week saying that ritual abuse does exist and recounting some of my experiences in my research, I've received a letter from a woman minister in the Anglican Church whose father was the leader of a cult back in the 1960s. Well, naturally, I was we're skeptical about these claims. Mm-hmm. So I went and looked through, and this is all just kind of a breaking story I'm working on right now. I went and looked through our research files, and sure enough, 1968, there were these banner headlines about devil cult priest who had been running this cult out of St. Matthias Anglican Church in downtown Toronto, and a young teenage girl had died in this cult. Well, now I'm going to interview this daughter of this Anglican minister, but I mean, this just goes to show that here's another case from 1968 that was documented, there was a coroner's inquest, there was all this kind of publicity into it, but we all forget. We don't know that these things have happened in the past, right?
Now, eyewitness is critical in something like this. Did this daughter actually see her father involved in the cult?
Yes. Yes, it was a group, and she grew up. And as she said to me on the phone, that she watched the evolution of her father into this cult fanatic.
Mm-hmm. See, people don't want to believe that this goes on. How much testimony is there out there that ritual abuse actually exists?
Well, From what I've seen, because we're talking about behavior that's on the spectrum, as mm-hmm. as we know, that we can talk about the initiation rites that used to happen at fraternities. Most of those have been banned now because actually young people were getting killed. I mean, I remember my father telling me about initiation rites at Queen's University's medical school back in the 30s, and the kind of grotesque tortures, and that a young man died then. So that's kind of linked to the airborne regiment stuff, and to gang rapes, which we also know have happened. And then there was a story last week in Cambridge, Ontario, where a little two-year-old girl died in an exorcism cult, where the mother and the father and the next-door neighbors were involved in this so-called charismatic prayer cult, where they were exorcising evil demons from this little baby, and she died. So, you know, this is another example of cult activity that's right out there, sort of in plain view, if you will.
Judy, when you get to the conference, what points are you going to try to establish with everybody then?
Well, I'm going to really just try to talk, because I'm not an expert in any deep way. As you know, I'm just a reporter, and I've just covered stories, and so I can only talk about what I know is real and what really exists. And so I'm going to talk about linking the obvious contemporary examples that we see around us, which I think are pieces of the puzzle about this aspect of human behavior, of abusive human behavior in groups, and how peer pressure in different kinds of groups can force people who are otherwise decent people to do things that are unspeakably horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's an aspect of human behavior that terrifies us. I mean, look at what happened to Nazi Germany, and look at, there were otherwise decent German people who, because of peer pressure and because of the dominant kind of ideology of the Nazis, these otherwise decent German people did hideous things
mm-hmm.
to the Jews, you know, killing them in the concentration camps. And I think it's all part of, you know, as I try to grapple with it myself about why we're so terrified of it and why we go into this state of this frenzy of denial, I think it's because this behavior makes us sense how thin the veneer of civilization is, and I think it terrifies us about the potential for just a kind of brutal anarchy. And you know, I'm trying to understand in a compassionate way what causes the frenzy of denial.
You know that this conference is already under a lot of fire, and for a number of reasons. How significant do you think the conference is?
Well, I think it's extremely important, and I think it's amazing that it's happening in Thunder Bay. And, you know, perhaps it could only happen in a smaller center, because, I mean, even though Thunder Bay has received an enormous amount of publicity across the continent now, because you're, you know, hosting the first conference that I know of that is dealing up front with ritual abuse and with many other controversial subjects. And the Masonic abuse aspect is also very interesting, and I can understand again why many Masons would be very upset and feel that their reputation is being impugned. But I think this relates also to the Airborne Regiment, and you know, we've seen all these distinguished retired members of the Airborne Regiment saying, you know, that the Airborne Regiment should not have been disbanded, and it was a wonderful regiment. And I'm sure that there were lots of good people in the Airborne Regiment, just as I'm sure there are lots of good Masons who don't know what other Masons may be doing.
One last thought to you, Judy. Why did you agree to come and talk to the people here?
Because I feel that as a journalist, our responsibility is to really seek the truth and to shine the spotlight on aspects of society that we haven't looked at. And that's what I'm paid to do, and I'm in a fortunate position that I'm able to do it without negative repercussions to myself. So I'm happy to participate in seeking the truth about a very controversial issue.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Don. Yeah.
You are listening to 88.1 CKLN, and that was an interview the CBC conducted with Judy Steed. Next week, we will hear an interview with Lynn Moss Sharman, the coordinator of the Making Up for Lost Time conference, and also the Canadian coordinator of AICS-MC, the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimentation Survivors of Mind Control. Currently, XMC is engaged in a campaign to call for U.S. presidential hearings and a Canadian commission of inquiry into the mind control experimental abuses. Transcripts of this series are available at www.mk.net/tildemcf. You've been listening to CKLN, the International Connection, here on CKLN 88.1. Coming up next is Tejiendo Rebeldías.